Hey guys, just to let you know, this episode is amazing, really great. I freaking love Tony. He's the best storyteller I've ever sat down with. But in addition to the laughs that you'll be hearing on today's episode, you'll also hear some personal stories about suicide and thoughts to do with suicide. So if you are struggling with that, and this may be not the episode for you, also please call 1-800-273-8255 if you are thinking of self-harming yourself. Please do that. That is always available. That is the suicide prevention lifeline for you. 1-800-273-8255. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Shit They Don't Tell You. We are a CastBox original produced in partnership with Studio 71.
CastBox happens to be the fastest growing, highest rated podcast app on both iOS and Android.
Where you can find all your favorite podcasts. It's true, you could find like literally everything.
Not What's On My Shoes, the podcast.
That's not a real podcast.
Listen, I heard about it.
You can listen to Shit They Don't Tell You wherever you get your podcasts, but we hope you give CastBox a shot.
We think it's the best, legitly.
We actually do. We really, really do. This ain't no mind games.
Why didn't anyone tell me?
Hi, my name is Steve Green. Welcome to the Shit They Don't Tell You podcast. We're joined today by my lovely wife, Nikki.
Oh, I thought you were going to skip me. Okay.
No, no.
Thank you,
and,
sir.
The man who has many, many names, okay? One of them is Tony V. You also know him as Tony Valenzuela.
Tony E. Valenzuela, to not be confused with the other Tony Valenzuela out there.
Point. He is a director. He's a producer. He's a longtime friend. And he's got a longtime dick. That's what I heard anyway.
I heard that too.
I love that I'm perpetrating this lie.
That's what I heard.
I want to start it here.
Oh, now he's being humble.
He's being humble.
It's a lie.
Yeah.
That's great, Tony.
That's the rumor.
You're winning the room.
Yeah.
So today we wanted to talk about Shit They Don't Tell You about addiction.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I first just want to thank you so much for being here to talk about that topic because it's such a vulnerable topic. But I think it's a topic that is so relatable, especially right now with the opioid epidemic going on and, you know, people not even knowing they could get addicted to things. And there's not really anyone that's talking about it at the level before it happens. You know, I feel like they tell you about don't do drugs and that's about it. But they don't tell you about all the things that happen. They don't tell you about how easy it is to fall into that. They don't tell you about...
Nikki, you're so serious. This is so serious.
Right? Yeah. I am
this
so
is
dead.
We have Tony V on.
You brought me for this serious shit.
Just
okay.
Wanted a huge mood change. Really quick. Oh, you're having a good mood?
Well, no,
you having a good day today?
Here's the thing that's great about Tony. It. Is that Tony has very serious... has had a serious life. But
yeah.
Tony is very funny and very cool about
That's
everything.
That's what I love about you. Oh, that's why you. I think you're great for this topic because you're not a person
I'm not
that's,
making eye contact with Nikki right now. Just
you never
I'm
do
shy.
Drama. He don't do that drama.
No, he don't do stick up ass either. He's very,
no.
I don't know. You're a very approachable person.
Yeah.
Always have been.
Thanks.
Yeah,
and I like you both and we've had great conversations over the years. And Nikki, when you called me and asked me to come in and talk about this, I was like, okay, if I talk about it with anybody, it would be you guys. But yeah, I mean, just ask questions because it's
yes.
going to be kind of hard to get
totally.
It all like out of my brain into this microphone. Hello, microphone. I'm putting my brain in you.
And we just keep it really conversational. We're not going to like, we don't need to.
Top 10 questions.
We're trying
we don't
to get you to cry. Here's the thing. I need you to
we
cry.
We don't trending. Yeah.
Okay, so we can go viral. Exactly.
Yeah, well, give
Thank
us a good
you.
Thumbnail.
Oh my God.
Definitely give us a good thumbnail.
I'll press my chest together.
That doesn't
boobs
work
and
anymore.
Tears.
Now it's all tears. It's all tears and crying.
Boobs
and, like,
and tears
away.
Get you double
yeah.
views, I
Wait,
think.
Boobs still work?
Boobs and
I think
tears.
Boobs and tears. Because you got to be a person, too.
Okay.
Solved here today in the room.
Yes.
I
we
like
got
it.
Them both here.
Okay.
yeah.
Well, I just think your story is so fascinating, and I just admire so much of who you are now. Like, I admire the person that you are today, and I would never guess that about you. You know, I would never guess your past based on who you are now. But I think it's so interesting to hear your story because it's so different from, you know, the Tony that I know. And there's so many layers to your life. And just like take us back to a darker time.
Let's okay,
just
let's
stretch
go.
Up all
Here we
shit.
Go. And you guys,
used to be in music, yeah?
Yeah. So you guys should know I'm vaping right now. Like, just so you know, like I'm nervous
vape.
Right now. And I have like a little Nicorette lozenge that I've placed nicely on this beautiful tablecloth or sheet, can't tell. And I have a vape as well, so I'm fully double-fisted and ready to talk about the truth.
Love it.
Yeah, so I was, Okay, here we go. Let's try this. I'm from Fontana, California. Okay. And I spent most of my time growing up there. And when I was a kid and I was very young, I was like addicted to like any sort of form of sort of getting at like fantasy, anything that would get me out of my head. So in the beginning, it was like comic books and Chris McClaremont and John Byrne, X-Men, like way before it was a movie. And I just like this living in fantasy. And there's a lot of like, there's a lot of violence and a lot of intense things going on in my house. Just to give you a picture of my house, me and my brothers and sisters and my family were all very close, but it was a very difficult time. My parents were like highly allergic to working, so we were broke all the time. So it was like when a window broke in my house, like that you put in cardboard, and that's the way it went. And so we were that house on the street with the appliances on the front lawn and like engine parts and on the lawn. And there was literally a washing machine on its side in our driveway until I was old enough to move.
Oh my God, your house. Yeah. I think I lived
I've
on that
it.
Block.
It was like, you always knew when we were going to church because somebody would be banging on the horn for an hour. And then my mom would be like, we're going to church. And I'd be like banging on the horn. And that's what Sunday morning 9 a.m. was like in my house. And I just didn't want to fucking be there. You know, I wanted to be somewhere else. I found these ways of checking out. And I would tell myself stories about what was real and what was not. And I made up like, I would talk to trees and do all this shit just because I just wanted the world to be a lot more fucking interesting than it actually was, you know? And I didn't want to be in that space. And the most wonderful, like, I came out to my Boy Scout troop when I was like 12 years old, and I didn't realize, I was raised Mormon, and I didn't realize what I was doing at that time, but they were like all sitting around. We were all sitting around in the church basement. The guys are like, oh, you know, I'm really into girls. And I was like, oh, girls are awesome, but guys are awesome too. And I just looked around the room and I was like, oh, that was bad. That was really, whatever I just fucking said was not cool. And that's when it began. Like, I was like, just kidding, but it was too late. Like, they could tell. But I knew that I had this divergent life. There was something in me that was wrong, that was broken, at least in my head at that time. And I was so excited about this new world where I would lie all the time. And I would lie so that you would look at me and you would be like, oh, he's cool. Oh, he's cool. He's that guy. And or at least not look at me and make me feel shame. And I got into a fight in my ninth grade because I was bullied in most of eighth grade. And this kid came up to me and he said, I won't say his name, but I still remember his exact. Do you guys know?
Don't you
do
love
you guys
that?
Have
yeah.
that too? First
yes.
and last name
yes.
of like a,
100%.
Of like your bully.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like I can see him today. But his, I won't say his first.
And
I
a lot of them had comic book character names actually.
okay.
Like I know mine. Like his initials were BB. It was like Jesus, dude. It's like a comic book character.
Mine's mine, JP.
Mine is NP. But you know how in movies or cartoons sometimes the nemesis will have kind of the hero's name but a little different, like Mario's nemesis is Wario in Mario,
yeah.
You
classic
know?
Character.
So like my bully was like my name but like a little different, like exactly like my name but
Sicky.
Different.
It was like
yes.
Yeah, Wanicky.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to just take a hit real quick. You can add this later. Sorry.
You're good.
Take a hit of nicotine, and then let's talk yeah. about addiction.
I'm talking about being sober right now. This is fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Take a hit from your vape pen, you badass.
Oh, God. No, because it makes me, as you both, as soon as Steve said that, it's making fun of me.
And I took a hit from a monster.
Simultaneously took a drink
yep.
at the same time.
Yep.
They don't even see each other. They literally looked at me like a product placement where they like double drink.
And I took a sip of something that's even more potent than what you're having.
Oh, wait. Probably. So what is your drug of choice today?
Monster energy drinks, bro.
Okay.
Or Rockstar. I just go with the deal. Whatever the deal is, I don't give a damn.
Mine's a coconut milk latte from Starbucks. What? Sponsor us, Starbucks.
Thanks, Starbucks. We're waiting right here for you.
So this just your bully.
So my bully Jess says to me at the beginning of, it was a month into my ninth grade year. Jess was like, JP. Oh my God,
yeah, said that's okay. You first name, you were good.
Okay, cool. And he came up to me at the beginning of first period. We were like a month into ninth grade, and he was like, me and my friends are gonna jump your faggot ass after class. And I remember just like sitting there. And being like, I didn't even know this kid, first of all. I'd never had an interaction with him. We were both into Duran Duran. That's what I knew. Like,
that's
how
tight.
That's like, and that's the only thing I knew about this kid because we were both wearing this like new romantic 80s cool clothes in the desert swamp town.
You were like the cast of Stranger Things.
Basically, I mean, I saw Gremlins the summer it opened. You know what I mean? I was a kid. And I rode my bicycle. Like, that's all real. That's all real. And that's so funny, Nikki. I never connected those dots. That's awesome. So I was just sitting in class, and I remember, and my head was just vibrating with anger. You know, when your ears are, they can't hear people, and you start to feel that stress feeling. And I walked over to him in the middle of class, or like towards, I don't even remember. And I was like, stand up, you know, and he stood up, and I was like, if you're gonna fight me after class, then fucking fight me now. And he took a swing on me, and I don't know what happened, but I just pulled back and I hit him with like 14 years of anger, you know, and broke his nose, and he got suspended. And I went to the 7-Eleven, and these friends, these people who would later become my really good friends, were like, yo, we should go to Mike Burgstaller's house. They're having a party. And so I went to this party, and that night, and I had my first drink, and it was fucking wonderful. And my first night drinking, I was like, I should be careful, you know, like the first time, because it was like all of the tension, all of the shame, all of the fear, and all the shit that had gone down in my life. I was like gone. It was like gone, you know, like I didn't care that I was this secretly gay kid. I didn't care that my family was poor and that we drove around with like cars where the window was busted out in the back. I didn't give a shit. It was on. It was so on. Mm-hmm. And I went into a blackout, and I woke up, and I was like sitting, and there was these like 5 football players, because I found out later that it was the after the football game party that I was attending at Mike Burgstaller's house. Mike is great, guys. I know him to this day. There was like 4 or 5 football players around me, and I'm teaching them a song from my church, and we're all drunk and we're all singing it. And I was like, this forever.
Yeah.
This, you as a conductor of many people.
Forever.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you are. That's what you are. I've never seen anyone in my life who's more of a conductor of people than you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I love people.
You're very good at it.
I love the trust people give me when I direct. I love that I get to be there to hold the mat while they do their tricks and make sure that they land safely, you know, emotionally, psychically.
I also love the way that you talk to actors. It's a riot, man. Because I've done several things with you.
Oh, I love the way you talk to actors.
And because you clearly, I think, could have been an actor. And so you know kind of what to say to other actors, like instead of just be like, hey, I need you to just like do this real quick. You're like, hey, look, you're going through this thing, and it's like this, and I don't know.
So you give the essence of what you want the scene to be like without giving like a line reading.
Like you make me like smell the room. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like I get exactly what to do. You make it very easy to try to.
Steve loves smelling things too. So that's I'm
a real smeller. I've always been.
Really?
So yeah,
really?
Oh yeah.
Favorite smells?
I love the smell of gasoline. Number one. Ooh. By far. Yeah. That's a good one.
What?
That's a good one.
You love the smell of gasoline?
I love the smell of gasoline. Yeah.
You know what? I love the smell of cat saliva. I don't know why, but cat
that's
saliva,
bizarre.
I just
like it.
There's literally
a behind your head that's, when you said that.
Have you heard of that disease people have where like they're around cat feces too much and they become crazy cat people?
Yeah, I don't like cat feces. I like cat saliva.
It's a parasite.
That's what causes the crazy cat lady.
I think Nikki's got that kind of.
Maybe. I am addicted to cats, so.
It's not even a bit.
Let's
either.
Continue.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, copy that. So fast forward, like just fast forward in the story. I'm in LA. I get an internship at K-Rock. You know, a place for a person who doesn't want to be in reality and wants to constantly pretend they are something else is Hollywood. So, of course, I come here. I do really well. I worked at K-Rock, and then I worked at an indie hip-hop label back at the point where their hip-hop wasn't being played on the radio, called Delicious Vinyl.
Mm. And, I had a t-shirt of that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Rick Ross, Mike Ross, all those guys. And I could party just like everybody else. I wasn't even 21. I was going to nightclubs and doing all this stuff way before I was 21. And I could get in and I could talk my way in and I could do something that other people couldn't do. I could party all night, sleep for 3 hours and come to work.
Wow.
So when I was like 19, I think when I was 20, I was the head of media relations for Delicious Vinyl because I could party all night. And that really meant I had like a little cubicle and I was,
you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. But it was like, and I remember the Paul Moshe, the head of marketing, was like, what, you can't just have that title. I was like, I've earned it. You know, I was like, I earned shit. But I could get there at 10 a.m. and make the calls and get the shit done. And I was hanging out with like the Far Side and Tone Loc, and it was, I could do my job, right? I could do my job and still party super, super hard. And it was wonderful. But there's a saying, like, the only thing worse for an alcoholic than bad luck is good luck, you know? And that's, that was totally what happened. I went to Germany. I got a publishing deal. It's almost 20 years ago. In fact, right now, 20 years ago, I was like, I was in the most terrifying part of my life. I think that's why horror, I've done horror and done genre work really. It's been very easy for me because I remember like what it's like to have delirium tremens. I was in the I'll explain it to you. They used to get it back in the 40s. They don't. It's not really a thing anymore because there's too much education. But in 1998, some of the worst things in my life were happening. I was like, I had a publishing deal. I had a recording contract, and people started to say
for music.
Yeah, with BMG.
A lot of people don't know that you used to do music.
Oh, yeah.
I feel it.
Music is my first love and still my greatest love, and I will always do music, and I'm going to record, I'll probably record something in January.
That'd be so rad.
Because I just love it, and I love to sing. I love that. I love the fragileness of singing and the, like, being at the edge and being vulnerable. And it's like the one place I can be the most vulnerable, because when you're a director, you're really just like a coach. You really are like, hey, we can do this. And as I've gotten out of the way of my own work, being a director, it's really not about you. And the more you don't make it about you, the more you make it about the story you're telling and the artists that have been kind enough to come and join you, the better your shit gets. The more you're like, I'm trying to find the essence. Like, get the fuck out of here. Nobody cares. Yeah. Like go home and do your macaroni necklace and put it on the fridge yourself and go, I'm a winner. Because that's not what our job is, to tell stories. But anyways, so I'm in Germany. I'm in Germany, and people are saying things to me that are like really scare the shit out of me. And they're saying things like, we like your work. We think you're really talented. We love your voice.
That's terrifying.
Like that. Yeah, especially because I'm a kid. I'm a kid from Fontana, California, high school dropout, ex-meth head, who's like, because I did meth in high school because it was easier to find than alcohol, quite honestly, in the Inland Empire. Back then,
a lot of my friends in Santa Barbara got addicted to meth and stayed addicted to meth and got into other heavier stuff. Like it's very it was easier for them to get meth than it was to get alcohol.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a trip.
Yeah,
and there was nothing like living in a desert town and watching like Cartoon Network at 4 a.m. and being like, life is amazing.
That's exactly what they did.
You know what I mean? Like you're like, I'm going places. It's like, no, nothing is moving around you, but yes, you are going places. You know?
So I knew some people who were addicted to World of Warcraft, like no joke.
Oh yeah, no joke. I have a friend who lost his apartment because of it. Like quit working, was a locksmith.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, see, if anything, I think I've been addicted to video games, but we'll talk about that later. So you started having success, and then you started getting imposter syndrome. Is that what happened?
It was imposter syndrome, but it was more profound than that. It was the I don't fucking belong here syndrome. Mm. Like I don't have the insides. I don't have the skill set to survive success, to survive opportunity. I don't have that skill set. I have the skill set to hustle. Like, oh, look, yeah, this is like, I'm going to do this for you. If you give me the money, I'll do this and I'll do this. And I promise I'm a good salesman. Mm. But like the actual product for that's like fucking terrifying, because that's the product. It was me. It was my words and my voice and the things that I cared about. And I would kept wanting to. I've done that even on YouTube to the detriment of others and myself. I've always wanted to hide behind other people. You know, like I remember when Phil, it was so wonderful to work with Phil, like. Philip DeFranco, I've worked with him back in the day. Philip's a guy who does a longest running news show on YouTube, yeah, I think, sure, at this point. And I remember like meeting him and being like, this is the voice.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like I've seen it all go south. I own a home and I can tell you I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You know, I love that you guys, they keep drinking from their drinks simultaneously, and now Nikki is like, it is the weirdestly timed. They keep, and I'm sitting across from the table. And it's Nikki keeps changing what she's drinking. First she had the Starbucks cup, now she has the spiked sparkling seltzer.
It's water. But yes, I was sponsored by Smirnoff at one point, so they sent me a water bottle.
Cool.
But yeah, you're working with Phil.
So I was working with Phil, and I was so in love and in awe of his talent and his ability to relate to people and tell stories and just look directly into the camera. And so I hid behind him because that was awesome. You know, like I was too afraid, honestly. I did the same thing with Shane. I did the same thing with Anthony Zeiker. I did the same thing with The Collective. I did that, like, the same thing with all the way up to Jarrett Sleeper. Like, I always want you to be in front because we both know the truth. Like, let's get out. Let's be real. I don't fucking deserve any of this. I'm not good enough. I'm a piece of
shit.
Yeah.
And if you just stand in front, I'll just stand back here and be safe.
When did you realize all this was happening? Like, obviously now looking back, you know that was the truth. But back then, did you even know that was the truth, or were you just too scared to step out?
Yeah. Were
too
you aware scared. Of your own patterns?
Yeah. No, not at all. I was like terrified. I was 26. I'm living in Munich, and Sophie Rammel, my publisher, who I'm going to see later this month when I go back there, because we're just really good friends for many years now. She sat across from me in her desk at BMG, and she was like, she's looked at me, and she's like, Tony, it's okay to be afraid. You know, all this shit's happening around you. And I just remember thinking, like, no, it's okay for you to be afraid. I don't get to be afraid. That's not. I have to have the answers. I left home when I was young. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I had the false sense that if I just kept running fast enough, that nothing was going to catch up with me. And there were all those demons and ghosts and the abuse I suffered as a kid. And it was all there. And if I just fucking keep running, it'll just stay back there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It doesn't. Because my best friend in all of this, my greatest ally in all of this, was alcohol. Like, my greatest ally is like my best friend. We traveled around the world together. We met before I'd do live shows. We'd meet at parties. You know, it was like alcohol was like literally my best friend. It was my coping mechanism in a bottle. It was gorgeous. It was wonderful. Now there's a problem, as I drink from this water bottle. There's a problem. If you drink, if my life got so, there was a problem for me. My life got so great that in order to survive it, I had to drink just about every day, you know, and I didn't count it. I didn't think about it. Everything was just getting very soft, and my perception of reality was getting very strange. And I just was I was fucking terrified. Oh my God, it was 20 years ago right now.
Wow.
I was living in Munich, and I can, the cold wind blowing through Munich, and that loneliness is, I could no longer go to the supermarket because it would freak me out. And their supermarkets, by the way, are tiny. They're tiny. So this like means you can't go to a 7-Eleven. And so I would go to the gas station, and I would get like a Weisswurst, like a fucking sausage, and my supply of alcohol for the night. And then I walk back home, and always working, always in the studio, always trying to make my art bulletproof, mad as fuck, crazy as fuck. I remember one Saturday, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to drink tomorrow because I shouldn't drink tomorrow. I'm going to go to the park. I don't know why I fucking thought that. There's this beautiful place in Munich called the English Garden. And it's just gorgeous, gorgeous place. And I was like, I'm going to go to the park tomorrow, and I'm going to walk around. and I'm going to be happy because I have this record deal, right? And you don't get to do that when you've been drinking every day for you don't know how long. And so I woke up that morning and I was like, I can't believe it. I've never, but this is, if you're listening right now, I only say this so that maybe somebody out there might hear this.
Yeah, of course.
And somebody out there might relate. It's not about me even at this moment sitting in this room talking to two of my dearest friends who I've known forever. And I think this is the only reason why I can have this conversation.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. You're amazing, Tony.
Yeah, you guys are too. We were here at the beginning before there was all of this, before YouTube was a thing. We just were just filmmakers and artists and actors and directors just trying to hustle. And
we weren't influencers.
No, we weren't influencers. We were people who had stolen the keys to the internet from our parents.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There was no moniker then.
Nah.
So So I have this thing called delirium tremens, and what that is you have auditory hallucination. You hear stuff that's not happening, you see stuff that's not happening. It's like you're tripping, like it's like mushrooms, except for you're sober. So imagine that happening just when you're sober. And I was so fucking terrified. I'm just gonna go all the way there. I was so fucking terrified. I was in this apartment. I wake up in the morning. I'm going to go to the park. I don't feel right. I'm calling people. I can hear the fear in my voice. I don't feel right. And I go to take a bath and I pull out the water. You know, I pull out the water and the sound of the water going down the drain sounds like pigs. And I start hearing pigs everywhere. Super fun times. People die from delirium tremens. I didn't know that.
Really?
Yeah, I found out like later. They're like, you had DTs?
I've never
like,
even heard of this.
Yeah, because it's in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Because now you would like be in rehab and they give you a bunch of pills and they like soften your landing. Mm. I think that's why I've stayed sober so long. It's because no one softened my fucking, it was hard. It was coming in for a crash landing. And so I remember what it's like to be like, fuck that. Whatever the fuck that, yeah. Anyways. So I'm having these hallucinations that there's pigs in the bathtub, and my mind, it's so crazy. My mind had like a total schism. It had one thought, this is bullshit. And the other thought, there's pigs in your bathtub, and they were just crashing together.
Wow.
And in that madness, I like saw this, I had a girlfriend at the time, was still lying to myself, obviously. And she was a wonderful woman. Sabina's a wonderful woman. But I was like, I'm not gay. I just really like this dick? Gay stuff. I'm not gay, yo. I'm Mormon.
I just like dick a lot.
You know, whatever, right? Yeah, sure. The matrixes that we must escape from our childhood in our adult life. There's so many.
Yeah.
And that was one for me. And I opened the window on the fourth floor. Sabina was a dancer. She was on tour. And I was there by myself. And I opened the window on the fourth floor. And I was just like, go. It's open. Like, we're done. And, you know, it didn't feel like the end of the world. It felt like a really fucking good idea.
I've been there.
It felt like a really fucking good idea.
You think it's like, because you had so many thoughts of like, I just want to die. And like, I just want to, you know, like before when you're depressed. But then when you actually are like, that's a good idea. It's like calming. It's like peace. It's like peaceful.
Yeah. And it was a really good idea, and I opened the window, and I was like, hey, let's go. We're done. We had a good shot. We had a good run. You went further than you ever would have. I never thought I'd leave Fontana. And there's a picture of my sister Julia, and it was taped to my lamp to remind me of, like, this person that I loved who's 10 years younger than me. And I just was like, there's another person out here. So there's another person. And if you die, she'll never know you. You know, I've been gone in Europe for like 2 years at that point, 3 years. And she won't know how much you love her, how much you're proud of her, and how much you're sorry that she's going through some of the same shit you did when you were a kid. Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to go all the way there. I hit my knees and ask for fucking help. I said, fucking help. And the whole world slowed down in slow motion. And within 2 hours, my music partner, or in an hour, my music partner was there. And he was like, hey, I'm like, I'm going crazy and I want to kill myself. And he was like, don't worry. He's like, I have this amazing marijuana from Los Angeles, and it was so hard to get buds in Munich. You know, it was so hard to get buds in Munich, and it was so hard. You know, it was easy to get hashish, but not marijuana. And I haven't talked about this in a minute. And it was so special. That was such a special thought that he had. But I was like, it was the first time in my life ever. I was like, my problem is bigger than this solution, this tiny little solution. And I ended up checking myself into, I'm just going to go all the way there. I ended up checking myself into a psych ward, and because I was like, I'm crazy. And after 3 days, they were like, no, you're not crazy. You're, they didn't even say alcoholic then. They were like, you're just not crazy. But in your life, I hope for every one of you that you'll get to do feelings groups with a bunch of very crazy Germans in a language you kind of don't understand.
They were out crazying Tony V, which is a feat in and of itself.
You know? Wow. And then I came back to the United States after swearing off booze, right? I was like, I'm not going to drink anymore. It's bad for me. I'm going to take a break. In fact, I don't even know if I had. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Sorry, you guys are drawing this out, and I don't want to like.
No, you're doing great. This is absolutely captivating.
Okay. So Sabina gets me a therapist when I get out of the psych ward, and she's like, and the therapist says, you should quit drinking for 2 months, right? And 20 years ago now, I had quit drinking for 2 months, you know?
Congratulations.
Yeah. That was like,
that's amazing.
Meaning like, it's fucking 1998, I'm in Munich. I'm 20 years sober. I got sober November 26, 1998, just to clear shit up. But just to give you a timeline. Yeah. But at that point, I was like, the therapist's like, oh no, you should totally quit drinking for a couple months. And I heard 2 months, right? Couple is two, right? Only yes. Two. That's all it is. And I heard that. And I'm not an alcoholic. Yeah. I'm crazy and I'm an artist and it's just hard to be me. You know? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, I made shit so hard on myself, Steve.
Yeah.
So fucking hard on myself. Yeah. That was like up until 2 years ago. I was still like, still making shit hard on myself. Even though I'm not drinking or using drugs, I still, like, I'm the enemy of my life. Fuck. You know? I'm the problem. And if I just get out of my own way, things are cool. So I'm sitting there, Sabina, and I told Sabina, oh, I'm having these headaches. I have these headaches. So I quit drinking for 2 months and get hooked on painkillers in that time period he said drinking and he said 2 months. And I wasn't going to not do anything. I'm not stupid. You know, you got to do something.
Take it very literal.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And I started drinking again Halloween of 1998. And then I was drinking and painkillers, which is a special kind of death. You know, if you really want to fade out.
Yeah.
You know?
What was the painkillers?
So as I understand, I don't know. I've guessed over the years.
Yeah.
I know that when I would take one, my whole body felt so good. it felt like somebody had rounded the edges off of the world. Do you know where you said everything was soft? It was like those bouncy ball things. It's like everything is just so pleasant.
But then it wasn't enough. You're like, I need to mix this with alcohol.
Yeah, because why shouldn't you?
Right.
Yeah. Wait.
You know why? We
will get into painkillers and alcohol in just a second. We're going to take a quick break to talk about our sponsors, and then we'll come right back. Hello, hope you enjoyed the podcast so far. We're taking a break to talk more to you about our podcast.
If you're enjoying the podcast, you should rate it 5 stars, because that really helps us out a whole bunch.
It does help us out a lot. If you rate and review us, we would love you. We love you for doing that. Thank you for listening. This is a CastBox original, produced in partnership with Studio 71. CastBox is awesome. We love them.
Most sickest company on the earth, in my opinion.
It sounds like I'm trying to induct you into a cult, but no, we really just really like the app. It's great.
Listen, if cults were as good as the CastBox app, yeah, guess what?
Get it.
Everyone
get the
would
name
be in
right.
cults.
You'd be kicked out of this cult.
Every
this
single
cult.
Person would be in cults.
It's a terrible cult
if they're
cult
as good
leader.
As this app is, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
But unfortunately, they're not, which is why you should probably stay away from
Can
cults.
Can you pass some of that Kool-Aid over here?
It's delicious. Drink. We're getting all this, right? We're monetizing all this? Okay, perfect. Thank you. Perfect.
Brought Wonderful. To you by Kleenex.
Yeah.
I need a drink.
Yeah. Yep. We're still on the coping phase. Good. Bear with us.
It's good for you. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. I have no, like, Smirnoff's like,
yeah, right?
Smirnoff. Tissue paper. For those real tears.
Sponsor of the program today, Smirnoff. Huge shout out. Try their new, cayenne pepper vodka. It's great. Oh, it tastes like the real thing.
I could take so many and never like feel any alcohol.
Yeah, right? It doesn't have that alcohol taste that we all, you know.
Oh my God, chocolate milk. Mm. Yeah. You're talking about that. I'm like, I want some chocolate milk right now. I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds so decadent. Okay. It
gets you fucked up.
That's chocolate milk gets you fucked up. Yeah. All right.
Get that sugar high.
All right, I'm going to take, I am real quick.
By the way, Tony's the only person I've ever seen abuse Red Bulls.
So real.
Abuse.
Spanks them.
Oh, you know, and just unbelievable.
And you know what's so funny? I don't drink Red Bull anymore. Like, but Red Bull is really nice.
You're about to lose that Red Bull sponsor.
I know, but the Red Bull is so awesome because they sent, like, Jessica Irwin at Red Bull sent, like, 3 boxes of Red Bull to the shoot that we did because we were all shooting nights earlier this week. And wait, this week. What's today?
Yeah.
Monday.
Yeah. Well, last week.
Last week. Okay. I was like, where are we?
I know.
But it was so cool. I was like, thank you so much. I can't drink Red Bull when I direct because then I start to lose the actors and the shots because I start getting like this weird hyper focused and I stop being able to connect directly to the actors because I'm so caffeinated that I'm like, oh, that was great, this is great, everything's great, you're great, you're beautiful, wow, this is amazing, you know, all this shit. And
that's
it's
a good Tony impression.
And it's really, and I need to be like, okay, I'm still here with you, bud. I know it's 4 a.m. We got our last shot.
Yeah.
You're going to do it. This is going to be fun. I need to be that guy. I need to be like, you look really good. Your hair, his hair is like 1/8 centimeter out of place. Can you see that shit? Can you do this? It's like, no, he's walking through a door. It doesn't matter. It's art. You know, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
You know,
I've seen both of these Tonys.
Yeah. Same.
Listen to me. Yeah. I mean, that's just like, I mean, it's like scary teacher / drunk uncle, you know, at Thanksgiving. Like, put uncle, you need to go to bed, Tony. You're tired.
But
you're done for today.
But
and
what's
crazy.
Great is you always seem like you know what you're talking about, even when you're on Red Bull Tony.
Yeah, and it was funny because Red Bull Tony definitely was like, I felt more like, I'm confident because I was so scared all the time. Now I'm like, fuck, I'm terrified. I literally said that I had this actress, Pepe Sanuga, who plays Daisy, the ringmaster of this carnival.
This is a cool name. Pepe Sanuga?
Oh God, she's so incredible. She was on a Freeform show, and she was just such a good actress that literally shooting her for after the first 10 minutes, I was like, we gotta go outside. I said, she's like, what's up? I'm like, you are so fucking gorgeous, and you're so talented, and I'm so intimidated right now, and I need to break you up. Because I need to make sure that your human parts come out, like that it's not a fashion show. Like, and I'm having a hard time because I'm just like, you're incredibly talented and beautiful, and I'm intimidated. And she was like, oh, cool. So we went back in and just did our job.
Nice.
But if I don't do that, then I'm like, I feel like she's in this moment a little more human. And the director, you start to try to reduce the actors and the artists because you're afraid of them.
Interesting.
And I don't do that anymore. Like, oh no, you're doing it wrong. I see people do that all the time. They try to reduce the actors because they're just intimidated. They're afraid or they don't have the answer. Instead of saying, going like, I'm afraid I don't have the answer. They're like, yeah, we're going to do 55 takes of this until you have no fucking like compass.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Just to fuck you because I'm in charge. And
Or hey, can you do this line reading? That's the word. I'm always like, dude, I'm leaving.
I want you to be like, I love you.
Yeah, I'm like, it's just
and that's why I have a thing called I say Taco Town Tuesday, and on set all the time I'll be like, yeah, Taco Town Tuesday, and because I don't allow myself to line read, so I'm like, yeah, you know, Taco Town Tuesday.
Yeah, it's like, he instead of the line he uses Taco Town Tuesday, but then he also morphs into like, I'm president of Taco Town Tuesday, and you're like, oh, I'm just a citizen of Taco Town Tuesday. And
you were so wonderful on set, like Nikki crushed it on The Fuck Happened. Like,
Tony and I did a movie together.
Yeah, she just did something. I was like, oh my God, this is my friend. And Daniel Paul, my producer, was like, you're gonna have a hard time with Nikki because she's your friend. And I was like, no, I'm not. That makes it easier. But he was right because she's like, she's not just my friend. She's an actress totally bearing her soul and totally willing to do it and totally showing up to the point I called her a couple of months ago and I was like, I'm sorry. And she's like, why? I was like, because she, you know, your wife did stuff on set that was very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But because it was Nikki, I wasn't like, oh, good job. You're amazing. I was just like, oh, cool. All right. Instead of being like, fuck, I just really saw you go there.
I see.
Do you know what I mean? Sure. And so that was, so I understand that now. I think that was really helpful because in post, I was like calling Nikki all when I was editing her portion of the movie and I was just like, you're amazing.
He's the best.
You know?
I know. Every time you call and she's like, oh, it's Tony. I'm like, all right, I'll see you in like an hour 30.
You know what? So you know what though?
It's great.
You know what though? Anyone who knows me knows I don't pick up the phone, and I pick up the phone for Tony.
That's for sure.
Because I love talking to you. I think you're just so fucking interesting.
Yeah.
And I just,
as everyone can tell from listening to you.
Yes. Thank you. So painkillers and alcohol.
Yeah, so what you do is when I was on painkillers and alcohol, I come back to the United States for Thanksgiving of 1998 because a family I've avoided for many years and seen only a handful of times, they're going to fix me. I was that desperate. I was like, I'm going to go home because home is where the heart, all this bullshit I was selling myself, all these things I was telling myself. And what it really meant is I was carrying around a kill dose of painkillers in my pocket in case things went really south. I was going to be like, let's go. And my friend Jennifer... my friend Jennifer T, she took me to my first AA meeting. But what preceded it was pretty delightful. Like, it was a really good thing. I tried to check myself into a mental health place. I was like, I'm crazy and I'm suicidal and I want to die. And I was never saying I have a problem with drugs or alcohol. I was like, I'm crazy and I'm an artist and it's hard to be, you know, like the same shit, right? Like I was talking about earlier. And the cool thing is when you go to like a mental health facility in the United States as compared to Germany is there's two people you meet. The first one is the hostess and the second one's the bouncer. And the hostess tells you, you need to be here. You could die from detoxing from all the stuff you've been doing. And this is like really important. And we'll give you whatever you need and da 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 da. And then you have the bouncer when they find out you don't have insurance. And they go, you need to fucking go to AA.
Right.
It was like, what? What? You're an alcoholic. I was like, and right. How is that the problem? I've been an alcoholic since I'm fucking 14. Yeah, how is that a
like
problem?
I'm so productive.
My life is the problem. My crazy head is the problem. You know? And the cool thing is actually the bouncer on my way walking out gave me like a card to a place called Michael's House and said they sponsor musicians at the Musicians Assistance Program. Sponsors musicians and they sponsored me and I was there. And
when you say sponsor, just for people who don't understand.
Oh, so they actually paid for me to go to a place called Michael's House in Palm Springs, and I was there for 5 weeks. And that
thank God you're a musician, man. What if you weren't a musician?
I don't know, because I don't. There's like seconds and inches. What if my sister's picture was on the right side of the lamp, not facing towards the window? Like, there's all of those things, Steve. That I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Wait, you know? So you mean that God didn't strike you dead once he found out you were gay?
No, he didn't. Actually, God's kind of fucking cool. You know, like, God's actually kind of cool. I always thought he was mad at me. I always thought he was this like white guy with a Charlton Heston thing with a beard. He's like, well, I think
that's
I just described Moses. But it's like, I thought he was this guy and he was like, I really like you, but
that's
I
Santa,
hate you
actually.
If you don't do what I want. And he's just, that's not my experience with God. Mm-hmm. Good orderly direction. You know, that's not my experience.
Oh, I like that.
My experience is that if you show up and pay attention to what's going on around you, you can move with the stream of life. You can move with the wind at your back. If you fight it or you just are antagonistic, well, yeah, then you're just fighting everything. And I think from the fight I had with Jess in ninth grade up until a couple of years ago, I was just like fighting for my place. And then I was just like a couple of years ago, I was like, you're fighting yourself. You're in this long-ass battle with your idea of who you think you should be, and it's a lot of it's fear, and I'm just fucking exhausted. I'm 46 now, you know, and like 2 years ago, I was like, I'm done.
Dude,
I'm done
look,
with the Tony V story.
You look like
it makes me
28.
Fucking nuts.
Yeah, dude, Jesus.
I totally was.
Like,
I was.
I'm going to look like Nick Nolte when I'm 46. Yeah, dude. You look incredible.
You look like a fucking young buck.
Oh. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. Bro, I like this Tony.
Thanks, man. Yeah, thanks. I got that. Yeah.
He rolls up his
really
sleeve.
Cool. I think I'm Elvis right now.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You're like a young buck from the 1950s now.
You know, it's November 26, 1998, Thanksgiving Day. I checked into Michael's house, and I've been sober ever since. And it's not like I haven't thought about drinking. It's not like I haven't thought about checking out. I found new. It was interesting. I think one of the reasons why I became a director is because in 2008, I was working at an ad agency. My boyfriend had I was working at an ad agency, just being really specific. I was working at an ad agency, and the head of marketing for one of the networks had just like hit on me in New York in the back of a cab. And I was like, when I first came to LA, my boyfriend had a television show on, and we would go and see tapings of it on Friday nights. And I had had that, like, I'll take care of you already. And so it was like the idea of somebody else taking care of me and meth went away in my early 20s. Like, it was like, this is bullshit. Yeah, this is bullshit. I remember my boss at this record label, she like took me to the bathroom once. She's like, you got to do this stuff. It's called cocaine. It's amazing. And she like put it out in the bathroom. And we did a couple, I'm so being, this is fun. Yeah. What the fuck do I have to hide? I'll be dead in like 30 years. You know, who fucking cares? You know what I mean?
That's
like,
the rate that you're aging. Have you seen yourself in the mirror? Jesus.
Yeah. But it was like, so this woman put out this coke, and like we did this coke in the bathroom at Delicious Vinyl, and like we go back to our desk, and like 30 minutes later I was like, oh, like it went away. This is some bad junk bunk shit. And she's like, no, that's cocaine. You just do more. And I remember being like this desert kid going like, these poor LA people. one light of meth and you're up for like 12 hours. Like this poor LA people, they don't get it, you know?
That's great.
Not knowing it's fucking rat poison. I thought it was like magic stuff in a little baggie. That's what I thought meth was. But yeah. All right. I got lost in my own fucking storytelling. Oh yeah, I came to LA.
You were taking care of your boyfriend. Oh, your media company, a marketing. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. God. Mm-hmm. Ooh, it's too much fucking story. So this guy from the network hits on me in the back of this cab, you know, in New York, and this is in 2007 to 2008, and my boyfriend had just fell out of love with me, and he was like, I'm done. And I remember, like, in the hallway crying those, like, child.
Like, some very manly child.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's not what it sounded like. I was like, oh, God, I'm going to be alone forever. All this stuff. And that, plus the job I didn't like, I was in so much pain. And I was angry. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't express it with my advertising key art job. You know,
I think you just spoke for a lot of people in that industry.
And I made my first web series, and it was so violent and angry and bitter and all of those things. All those things I think I was feeling for many, many years. And that's what sent me on my way with YouTube. And that's why when people were like, oh, you should direct horror, you know, like you're very good. You're very good with dark subject matter. I was just like, I hadn't even watched horror movies. I was afraid of them. Mm-hmm. I was like one of those people would be like, I can't see them because then I can see that image in my eye
forever.
That's
how Steve is.
Yeah, you can't really. You can't really. I mean, I don't know, but that's what I used to say. I was like, I can see it. It's a visceral fear. It's like, no, I'm a fucking fearful person. And I don't want to watch a horror movie because that just makes the fear I already have in my head.
It just amplifies it.
Amplifies it 10 times more. And then I'm even more afraid. The cool thing is with Black Box TV, I mean, it's like 8 years later. Yeah. It's like I've been through all of my
nightmares. This was a YouTube channel that Tony did for a long time.
Yeah.
Horror focused.
Black Box TV.
Yeah.
And that's like youtube.com/blackboxtv.
That's it.
We're still around, though I'm old.
You just won a Streamy.
Yeah, we won a Streamy.
Yeah.
But not your first one either.
No.
You're collecting those things, huh?
Yeah,
pretty much. I'm
what are you doing
of,
all those?
You know, they're on my stairs to remind me that I'm a good person. Not until you get awards are you really a good person.
True.
Wait, no, I haven't gotten one. I'm a terrible person.
Yeah, she doesn't win much.
Don't worry. One day, you too.
Don't
will
tell
be
me that. Don't tell me that.
Yeah, she's giving up on that.
No, can I tell you something? I'm actually really proud of them. I'm making fun of them right now, but I'm proud of them because I'm like, it's not really about me anymore. When it's about you, you fucking are miserable. But,
right.
But every one of those is like, the dozens of people who worked on them.
Right.
And when I see them now, I think of like, oh my God, this was Camille, or this was Kathleen Grace, or this was Naomi Lennon, or this was like, these are the people who allowed me to make these things. And so it keeps me actually grateful and humble. So it's kind of an interesting thing, but I used to be like, I hate award shows. I don't need awards. It's like, yes, I do. I need all of them. I need every fucking one that they ever have just so that I can like walk outside and talk to a stranger and go, hello, you know? Because now I'm ready. I've won all the awards. Yeah. Right. All the toys.
Go with support behind your back. Little metal men.
Yeah. But I mean, that's that's kind of basically my story. Is it's like I stopped going. There's a place where people go who are alcoholics like myself and drug addicts like myself, and I went very consistently, and then my career took off like about 2013, 14, 15, and I stopped going to this. I stopped being a part of that community, and by 2.5 years ago, I was out of my fucking mind. I really was. I was like, all of the fear had come back, all the insecurity had come back. It wasn't even like imposter syndrome. It was something far worse. It was like, it's all a lie. I'm a lie. I was like every person, I'd be jealous of you, jealous of Michael Gallagher, jealous of Shane, jealous. And not really jealous like, oh, I'm jealous and I want to be you. I was jealous like I could never be you. I could never be good enough, ever. And it was this thing of this like, and it all came back. And it was actually Jarrett Sleeper. He was like sitting outside of, we're sitting during the fourth door because, of course, I have to be a workaholic because I don't even deserve to exist. So I have to work all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think that you know? Kind of took the place of alcohol?
A little, oh, my God, 100%.
Know? Yeah.
Like, 100%. Like, I, my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything that feels good, I will do it until it doesn't. Like, anything.
Or anything that lets you escape your actual reality.
Yeah.
You know, work is not your actual reality. It's like you're creating and you're in this other zone. But like you go home and alone in your bed, that's like the real reality. So anything that takes you away from that, I feel like you could get addicted to.
I think so. And I think I have a much better relationship with my work now because I just call it my day job. I have great coworkers. Nikki, you're one of my favorite coworkers.
Aww, like
I have these great coworkers that I get to work with, you know. And that's, it's just a fucking day job.
Yeah.
What people come up to me at parties, are like, what are you working on? I'm like, doing yoga every day, spending time with my son.
Love it.
That's awesome.
Because that is actually what
I'm
working on.
It's not the first 5 things you can brag about, which is what every LA party, how you doing thing is.
Yeah, because they're really saying, how are you doing? And am I at the same level?
Yeah, what can I get out of you or not?
But it's also like we're matching you up going, you know, hey, is my dick 3 inches bigger than it was like a month ago? Oh my God, it is, but yours is 12 inches bigger than it was. Oh my God, I'm never going to catch
up.
Who needs, by the way, a 2-foot long dick? I just want
to. I do.
Yeah. So there's your answer. You've always wondered.
I hope I didn't just blow you out. I'm very quiet. This is my intro.
So in the beginning, did you go through any relapses at all? Or I know that for a lot of people, or like part of in the definition of getting help for addiction, they were talking about how it's become common practice or to incorporate the fact that people relapse. You know, like that's become part of the normal process that is accepted. Yeah.
Since November 26, 1988, I've never had a relapse, and I haven't used painkillers. I discovered the magic of ibuprofen, and I'm not like suggesting this. I'm not a doctor, but like that was for me. I had to make it really black and white because I had nearly killed myself,
right?
You know, with the softness of everything, and so I haven't. I'm nervous about pharmaceuticals. I'm nervous about that stuff just because anything that you. And I want to talk about relapse in a second, but anything that you give me that lets me think that something is solved by doing that thing, I want a gallon of it with a fucking straw.
Yeah.
I don't need one.
Yeah.
Are you stupid? Like, why would you take one of anything?
Yeah.
You know,
especially if it could solve all your problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Make me made of it.
The only thing I do in moderation is my taxes. Do you know what I mean? That's like the only thing. I'm like, well, let's sit down for an hour today.
Could that be a quote on a shirt? I need that.
You know, I took Adderall a couple years ago,
right,
and that shit was nuts, man. Like, I wrote an entire season of this stupid cartoon that I used to write called Dino Yacht Club. I wrote the whole second season in like 3 days just taking Adderall because it was just like hyper focusing, like what I imagine cocaine's like. I've never tried cocaine, but I think too,
like you're such a fucking spaz. You're so filled with so much energy and you're filled with so much like intensity, so much dark and so much light, which makes your work really wonderful. And so it's like anything that you would do to aid that, it would just let you go in those down different tunnels. It's not a different version of you.
Yeah.
But you have that anger and passion that makes you a great artist. It's like when I saw The Thinning at the premiere, I was like, oh my God, this is so fucking effortless for these guys. Like, this is just like, Steve is just taking a breath. Here you go. It felt like that clean. It felt like when I remember at the end, I was like, oh my God, they're going to do a Black Box TV, Andy. You better fucking do a better job. And, you know? And then you did. It just like opened up into something else special. And I remember being like, oh, fucking Steve's got it. Like he's got that thing. You know?
Well, I mean, obviously the people we work with, Michael, everybody over there at Cineman, all the, I mean, it's a, like you said, it's a Herculean effort of many, many, many people. Like even just translating something from script to screen is like a whole different thing. Like than I ever even thought about when I first wrote my first movie, where it's like, we wrote this movie called Internet Famous, and going from that page to the screen is such a different thing that I was not aware of. I never thought, like, I always thought, like, well, it's going to be exactly like this because that's what's on the page. But that's almost mean to do, right? Where you, when you hire actors, you don't want to just stick your hand up their ass and make them do it like it says on the page.
They should do better than what you ever imagined.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. That's, so you that's don't, why you don't think collaborate. Of that shit. Yeah. Right. You don't think of that shit. You just want to control all the levers and pulleys and.
Levers?
Yeah, all
levers are wonderful. I love it. Levers. It's great. Levers and the
purlieus. Such a British way of saying that.
But like you were saying earlier, like you want to be the artist, so you want to control everything, and you think that that's best for the thing. But I think it's not.
It's not.
So stepping back and trusting people
and do your fucking day job.
Yeah.
Pick great coworkers. Show up for it. You're not. I'm not finding myself in my work anymore. My work clearly represents tons of parts of my life and my story, et cetera. But like, it's I'm not on like a spiritual quest inside of my fucking films. That's not the job. The job is to tell a great story. Now, if that story is personal to me, that's awesome. That's like an added bonus. But I used to get in the way of my work, and it really made my job hard. I mean, it's like every route to success, I've like placed a brick wall in front of it just so I had to climb over something, you know? And then I was like, everybody's so tough and I'll never get mine. It's like, bitch, you don't know how to have yours. Like, someone give me $1 million and you'd be like, oh, it's from you, you know? Yeah. But instead of just being like, oh, thank you. And I think, so Jared was sitting across from me two, three years ago, working on The Fourth Door, workaholic, crazy out of my mind, working, editing 48-hour straight sessions. I'd never done that because I was looking for validation in the work. And hoping somebody would see that I deserved something. Maybe a cup of coffee. That basic, you know? And Jarrett was just, he was just in front of me. He was with tears in his eyes. And he was like, you know, are you still going to those meetings? And I was like, no. And he goes, I think you should. Hmm. And I've been very consistent with
so you went back.
Anonymous program.
And that brought you back, you feel like, from the springboard you were on.
It was just amazing. Like, I've had the best, I think this has been, I had the weirdest feeling, like, 6 months ago, or I was like, oh my God, I'm happy. Oh my God, oh my God. Wait, that guy's suing you. This is happening over here. Ba-da-da-da-da. You're not greenlit for this project. Oh, I know, but I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
How's like, that feeling?
It doesn't fucking matter. Like, I'm over it. And I just enjoy it now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. So awesome.
That's great.
You know, and I have bad days and good days, but shit happens. Like, I have to talk to my lawyer after this about this person who I think is going to sue us, and we're trying to settle. And it's the nature of our business that there's these things, but they're not bad or fucking good.
Yeah.
I just want to say this real quick. This is what life is like. And I know we got to wrap up probably,
no,
right?
Oh, we're good. Don't like, even worry.
Okay. I got to wrap up. I'm emotionally almost spent. But but I had this clear fucking understanding like a year ago that our lives are like, there are our mind states, our lives, our mental health, our sense of the world, our brains sit inside of this massive house, and there's thousands of windows in this house. And one window, if you look out one window, and each one has a different view. And if you look out one window, you see like your first kiss for me it was like I was 12 and it was a girl next door and we were up in the treehouse, or I see the I see a Berlin at night and all the streets are alive and it's amazing. Or each of them has a different memory or a different viewpoint. And I see my first day of sobriety through one, and I see my son, and I'm holding him in my arms when he was born. And I have all these different viewpoints. But I like to spend a lot of time at the window that looks directly down into a toilet. And there's a shit piece of shit floating in it. And I'm like, life is shit! It's like, yeah, because you're looking into a toilet with a piece of floating shit in it. And yeah, if you just fucking walk away from this window, you know? And that's an interesting thing, too. I realized how arrogant it is to be like, I know what I'm capable of. Mm-hmm. I know what my mistakes are. I know how. That's so, it's so arrogant to be like, to not let the light in and not let people in and not listen to them and not be available for them. It's like the depressive part of me is arrogant as fuck. You can't tell me this is, life is shit. Yes, because I'm looking in through a window where there's a piece of shit floating in the toilet thinking this is existence. And every time but every once in a while, I just go back there and look at that window. I'm like, life is shit. I'm like, I know right now, but we're really busy and we got to get to set. Sure. We'll totally get back to this like life is shit thing later. Let's go do yoga for 15 minutes first and then we'll see how we feel. You know?
Oh my God, I have those conversations all the time. I'm like, yeah, I know, but we got to get the shit done. There's like a deadline. But if there's no deadline, I just can stay in it and just forever just stay in it. I think that's like been the biggest help for me is just creating structure, just like having a schedule. And remembering to like put free time into that schedule, because then I start overwhelming myself, and then I'm like, "See, I can't do it all. See, I can't do it. See."
Every day that she goes through something like this, her main refrain is, "I can't do it all." And so my thing to her is always just, "You can just do one at a time. That's it."
Yeah, but I'm like, I need to do all the things all at once. Right. Yeah.
Well, that's what you want to do if you want to do nothing.
Yes.
Perfectionism is the tool I used to hold myself back for fucking years. Like, if you want to just do nothing, pretend you can do everything. Try to pick up a fucking chair and eat it. You know? It's like still one piece at a time.
Yeah. And you still can't do it alone either. That's the other thing is like, you know, nothing I've done in life I've done alone, right? I've always done it with many, many people, great people who make me better than I am, right? Like everything that I've done that I feel like I'm proud of, I've done with others. It's not been my own Herculean effort alone. The lone warrior, the soul like artist, like that doesn't exist to me. Like it's just, I am a product of the people I work with, which is why I love working with other people. I love it. I don't, like I write stuff on my own, but I love writing with other people. It's so fun. I just get so much more out of it. And I feel like I get another angle on things than I would just alone. Just being like, oh, this has to be perfect. You know, polishing a rock until it's perfect.
Right. Bulletproofing art.
Exactly.
To the point where it's not art anymore. Exactly. It's just all your fears hardened into a shell.
Yeah, and you don't want to show anybody because you're like, well, this, wait, and then when you this
show
is perfect.
Yeah, you show people your bulletproof art and they're like, oh.
It needs this.
It's bullet, you know, they're like, oh, it's, how do they connect with it? You've covered it. You've shellacked it with so much of your, like, that's what I did a lot of times with Black Box TV. It's like, I was so obsessed that you thought I was valid. I was like, more cranes and more dollies and more, because maybe at some point I'll feel a little bit less insecure if I have all these toys, all this stuff, all this blah, blah, blah. Bullshit. I started the channel with the fucking 5D and Joe Nation with a fucking beautiful, beautiful eye.
Yes.
You know, it was effortless. And that magic that was in that first season, I spent many years trying to say that was shit. And now it's like, oh, better, so professional. Better. Look how professional I am. I was like, if you have three people standing in behind you, or you have 40, you still have one job, and that's to tell a story. But I thought if you had 40, you could tell a better story. But actually, when you have 40, or when I started to grow, those were the hardest years during the Google funding, like for the YouTube originals. And those were the hardest years because I was like a guy who had been in his room by himself with a computer all night long, editing, controlling every aspect, suddenly had to talk to people who knew what the fuck they were doing. And they'd be like, what do you want? I'd be like, you don't understand me. What do you want? Like, what do you want us to do so that we understand you?
I want to defend myself. Yeah. That's what I want to do. Yeah, I want to defend myself.
Can't you read my fucking mind?
Exactly.
Because there's like, you just don't get it.
Yeah. What would a genius do? That's, you wake up every day and you go, what would a genius do, right?
Oh my God. Isn't that so tough?
Right?
That is so fucked up.
Yeah.
It's a turd floating in the toilet.
I know so many people out there who do that, where it's like, I'm never going to get something done because it's not perfect. And so they're just waiting for their perfect shot.
Well, it reminds me of that story. I don't know if you've heard this before, but I was reading this book by John C. Maxwell called Failing Forward. It's a good book. But there's a story that he told in it about a pottery teacher who split the class up into two groups, and he said this group is in charge of making, you will be graded on the quality of work that you do, so you have to create the perfect vase, and then this group you'll be graded on the quantity of work that you make, so you just have to make as many vases as you can. And so they went to work, and this group, the group that had to make quantity, just kept, you know, churning them out. They didn't care, they were just going. And then the group that had to make the perfect vase, they like speculated about what would make the perfect vase, and they thought about the glaze, and they thought about, you know, what, how the technique of curving and all this stuff.
Oh, it's so
inert. At the end, at the end of it, the group that did the quantity of vases ended up having way more perfect vases in there. And the one that the perfect vase group, they just made an all right vase. It was like mediocre because
there was a lot of thought around it. You could only see the thought bubble.
So Nikki just described how to make a Terrence Malick movie. He's like, yeah, you film a tree for 55 minutes. You have Brad Pitt come out at the end, almost naked.
Record everything MOS.
And oh my God, we are at the end, but this has been amazing. Wow. Thank you so much for being a guest here.
You blew the doors off this thing, Tony. Thank you.
I was like just on the edge of my seat the whole time.
This is my favorite podcast
we've
ever
done. Talk
about
a professional storyteller right here. No, you're just amazing.
We could just sit here and coast and collect ad revenue. It's just beautiful. Just the way
I was going another
time.
Route in my head. I was like, I can listen to you tell stories all day. And you can. Where can they find you, Tony?
You can find me on YouTube at Blackbox TV. You can find me on Instagram at Blackbox TV.
He's around.
All that stuff.
He's one Streamies, people. Streamies.
All that stuff. I'm like sitting cross-legged. I want to be like sit up now. I'm really honored that you guys let me come in here and talk to you guys and to share this with you. And it just feels really cool because I've known you guys a long time. But it's also like a lot of the stuff with my life, like being sober, having a son, the hard times I went through. I really hid those from you guys when I met you because I was just ashamed and I was confused. And it's really nice just to sit across from you now and be like, hey, this is a little story.
Oh, we love you, buddy. Absolutely. It's always just makes my day seeing
That's
you. You have no idea. You're such a light. I don't even know.
Like, yes.
Thanks, man.
You're just a good, good energy always.
So we like to do a thing at the end called final thoughts. So it's basically like, doesn't mean to wrap it up and like maybe the one thing you would have told yourself, your younger version of you self that you wish you would have known. Mine would be fuck perfect. By the way, you can get those necklaces.
Yeah, monetize Julia, that, Nikki. Good job.
Fuck perfect. fuck perfect. I didn't never get into drugs, but I got into like a lot of video games because I was just addicted to achievement, like a false sense of achievement. If I didn't feel like I was achieving in regular life, I needed to be achieving somewhere. So just play video games for hours, and then I'd have to go back to regular life where I didn't achieve anything.
You're trying to sign off right now, but I want to ask you a question real quick. Gifts from our parents. The lies that they told themselves and then passed on to us.
Yeah.
How are you doing with that?
Well, my dad was a perfectionist and then my mom was the complete opposite. So I'm a mix of both of them. I'm either everything needs to be absolutely perfect or I don't care at all. And we can just all die.
Yeah. Her mom just wants to like lay on a beach for literally ever and.
My mom thought she was going to do that until she got pregnant with me.
Yeah.
she thought she was just going to get high on the beach every day.
Yeah. You ruined my beach fantasy. Yeah. Welcome to Earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're welcome, Mom. I love you. it's a work in progress. But yeah, I totally related to a lot of your story. And I think my body's just too weak to handle any substances. I just pass out right away. So I just never got addicted to anything.
True.
But I did get addicted to that validation of video games, and I still do that. Like, I still get addicted to like things like nail art, where at the end of this thing that doesn't mean anything, like I made something and I could be like, I did that, you know. And with video games, it's like you beat these levels and it's like, I did that, and that's such a hard level and I beat it, and it's
that
like,
sounds cool.
It's not real. And I think that people like don't ever consider I never considered behavioral addiction, but it really did. It got in the way of socialize. I used to go into chat rooms for 11 hours a day and not socialize with anybody. I didn't know how to talk to people, but I made internet friends, and it was so much easier to talk to internet friends because we're all hiding behind something, you know?
Yeah.
And so that whole sense of hiding behind something, whether it be a person or a substance or whatever, I totally relate to that. And it's just dumb. You're not doing anyone any favors. So.
Steve.
My final thought is, listen, life is a complicated thing.
Is it?
Why spend so much money on razors when you can go to Dollar Shave Club?
I was thinking the same
Dollar Shave
things.
Club slash Degreed. Yeah. You save money on razors.
And you get a closer shave.
That's a Dollar Shave Club.
DollarShaveClub.com/Degreed.
I mean, I'm going to go there right now on
you should.
My
sign up. Quality razors.
You actually get a free sample box for $5. I mean, not free. A $5 sample box.
Yeah. That's amazing. So where should I go again?
DollarShaveClub.com/SteveGreen.
Okay, cool.
Life is just way too hard to spend your money on really expensive razors.
I'm going to go do that right now.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. I got to go.
Oh, there he goes.
Wait, Tony, he's holding
his phone.
Thought.
He can just use his phone. Got to go to his desktop, I guess.
So if anything I would tell myself in high school, I would tell myself, because I started making films in my early 20s, and there's a reason why I wanted to make first film. Let me clarify. In high school, I was writing scripts for films that never got made. And I would get people to rehearse them all the time, but we couldn't afford the money for the video camera. You had to have a credit card to do a deposit for a video camera. And this was beyond the scope of my parents' talents. I love you, Mom and Dad. But you're not listening to this anyway, so fuck you both.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, why did I subscribe?
Fuck your parents.
Sorry.
Just kidding. No, I'm very close to my mom. I don't know where my dad is. I think he's in Mexico City right now, still looking for his solution for his life. He's in a lot of pain, but there he goes. What I would tell myself when I was a kid is this. I'd say, hey, buddy, you're never going to be tall enough, gay enough, straight enough, black enough, white enough, secure enough or full enough or full of enough confidence. But you know what? If you want to do it, just fucking do it anyways.
Oh, nice. I love that.
Thanks, Tony.
Cool. All right.
Great talking to you.
Cute.
We'll see you guys.
Subscribe, rate, and never all that stuff.
We got a meeting with the ad revenue people. We're real excited about it. I got to go put on my suit.
Why didn't anyone tell me?